This is the Tim Graham Show
with the one and only
Mike Rodak.
Mike Rodak
and your host Tim Graham.
Show Sports Radio 1270 The Fan. I am Tim Graham, fresh back from Orlando, the NFL owners meetings. We have a lot to talk about regarding little tidbits that I picked up, things that I haven't reported yet that we can sprinkle throughout the show.
When I come in here, I know you're going to bring it. Going to be a surprise.
Buffalo
like
News.
The old goodie grab bag when you were a kid, you know.
Buffalo News senior columnist Jerry Sullivan. The senior columnist part is where I sit and say, no, I don't remember that, Jerry. That was maybe someday when I get to be a senior or something, I'll know those things.
Yeah. Seniors, we just sort of interrupt and stuff, like the old crazy uncle in the corner. We don't really get it. Like my wife says, I'm oblivious to what's going on around me, and she's usually correct.
Back in my day, Big Crooked. ESPN.com's Mike Rodak back after a week at the Bristol Spa. Is that where you were?
No, I was down in the Naples Spa in Florida.
Oh.
So I went to Florida. I did not go to the owners' meetings, but I enjoyed a nice, brief four-day vacation with family down there.
Very nice. Good to have you back. And in studio, a routine guest. He is you'd be like the Steve Martin on SNL. You just keep coming back. You're the regular, holding records for the most guest spots. The Alec Baldwin, the Tom Hanks of the Tim Graham Show.
Posted five times.
Polo Kerber.
I'll take it.
From the Hey Man Studios and also from the Cellar at 569 Elmwood Avenue. How's business there? What we got going on? What's the latest at the Cellar?
Business is good. We're working on
custom shoes,
yeah,
and Hey Man Studios really set the tone around the NFL with the customized cleats that a lot of these guys wear. And Hey Man has gotten into hockey. Did Alex Ovechkin some baseball?
Yep, we did some baseball. Did some hockey. Maybe we'll do some World Cup stuff. We have Ovechkin's about to. He might have hit it already. If he didn't, his 1,000th career game. So we're working on. He's not going to wear them on the ice, but just more something for him for his house and just have some different career accolades on there, do a portrait of the goal that he scored on his back on the side of the skates.
No, that's probably one of the greatest goals in hockey history.
Yeah, so
I know that Bobby Orr's is famous because of the photograph, but in terms of one of the most improbable. And didn't Bobby Orr recently, it was the anniversary of that goal, or he just turned 70, I think is what it was, and he said it wasn't really all that great of a goal. Like the goal, the actual goal itself, it was a momentous goal, and it was obviously a big victory. And the photo of him flying through the air like Superman has been turned into a statue outside of the Fleet Center. What is it now? TD Bank North Garden.
TD Bank Garden.
Dude, if you get me a
bank
pass.
North sorry, anymore. TD Garden. They dropped the whole bank.
Oh, okay.
Bank North part.
So anyway, Bobby Orr,
World Cup.
Good stuff.
Psyched up for that?
Yeah, I'm very excited.
Big,
I actually
big
have
World
the
Cup guy.
I have the German national logo tattooed on my leg.
No way.
Yeah.
How does that, I mean, where does this, are you German?
Yeah, I'm half German.
I mean, you I'll just go ahead and ask the question. I'll just throw
guess,
it, right.
Yeah, I'm half German.
Like
so.
Dirk.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Not a lot of black Germans.
Not at all.
Was your father in the service?
No. My grandmother's an immigrant, and on my mother's side.
Okay.
And my stepfather's where the African-American comes in, but my mom, all my mom's side of the family, all German.
So, do you still carry some Aryan pride?
Of course, yeah.
Only on this show.
Can't you see my
right.
blonde hair and my blue eyes?
That's on that list. Bulldoze, Aryan pride, what else?
Oh,
forbidden things.
We can ask these questions
on.
Because we all get along so well.
Yeah.
And Polo, by the way, is the guy knows about everything. Which is why we love having Polo on the mm-hmm. show. If we get into pro wrestling talk, Polo will dominate that conversation. NBA, NFL.
Not so much baseball. That's Jerry.
Everything. No. Hockey. He knows it. And that's why we love having you in. Thanks for coming
Appreciate
in, Polo.
It. Thank you.
Jonah Bronstein handling the Facebook Live for the Buffalo News' Facebook page. You can see a live stream of this show and all previous Tim Graham shows, except for last week's. We got yanked.
Chasing
we had a licensing. We had a licensing issue with the music. Sometimes we can play the music because we're on a radio station, mm-hmm. but sometimes you post things on Facebook and it's like a got to be some kind of algorithm, like a Shazam type thing, where they just recognize music and they say, "We don't know if you have the ability to use this," so they take it down.
So you're telling me that Facebook can figure things like that out?
Wow.
Yeah.
Can Apparently, they can steal all of our personal information too.
Facebook is psychic.
Who would have thought?
Bobby Rosati, he's our producer. He handles all things. He diddles all things knobs and handles all of our licensing agreements. Polo Kerber had to sign a non-disclosure agreement and a waiver that Bobby presented to him when Polo came here today. All right, so we got a lot to talk about. Baseball season starts tomorrow. New rules in the NFL. I just want to announce this. I mean, we don't have to discuss it because I don't know the details. I haven't seen it. But our old friend Solomon Renfro won over the weekend. Yeah. Solomon Renfro, the mixed martial artist who's been in the studio a couple of times, he won a split decision over Scott Noble Saturday at the Borgata in Atlantic City. So the Canisius High alum now up to 3-0.
He said it was the worst fight of his career.
It was a split decision.
Yeah.
And that is, I'm sure, a bit nerve-wracking. I saw that he had some water weight issues.
Yeah, I talked to him. He came in bloated. He actually lost the first round, so it was good for him just to see how he responded at the end of the fight, but he said he felt very sick before, had to throw up. You can't throw up during the middle of the fight. That's obviously a TKO.
That's frowned upon.
Yeah.
You can throw up during the middle of a rally and giving a speech.
Yes.
At the mall in Washington, D.C., but in the octagon.
Not in the octagon.
It is frowned upon.
You can poop, but you can't throw up.
I stayed at the Borgata.
Do we know that?
You didn't see
somebody had a problem, didn't they?
Yeah, somebody had a problem. It was a woman. I think it was maybe like two or three UFC pay-per-views ago.
No, I don't. Oh, boy. All right, let's change the subject.
Yeah. But he won.
Bills Stadium. Hey, Jerry Sullivan and Mike Rodak are trying to have a private conversation.
Off, but you were talking to Polo, so it's kind of
impossible. I figured instead
not his fault.
You realize that you're in the middle of a radio show.
We're whispering now.
Nobody
can hear us.
Not really. But when you're also in the middle of Polo and I trying to have a conversation, and two of you are talking with microphones right now.
We'll do our penance.
It's what makes the show what it is.
Right. People like that.
The fractured like sort that. Of incongruous it's, nature of it.
It's a mess.
Who wants that typical
incongruous,
organized,
more like an incontinent nature, which that brings us back full
about
circle.
Pope, right.
We're
see
incontinent.
How it all ties together? Hey.
We got Bill Stadium talk we can get to, but I want to introduce, right before we come on the air, Mike Rodak is doing a piece for ESPN.com in which he needs to determine, or do you need a shortlist or what, of the worst Bills draft pick since 2008?
The last 10 years, the best and the worst pick, not a shortlist, just the single
You
best
want that. Okay, so please,
worst.
If you have a vote, but also be ready to give an explanation. Just to call in and say Aaron Maben. Like, yeah, I know that there's a visceral reaction to Aaron Maben, but why? Why Aaron Maben? Why not James Hardy? Why not? You could probably even make a case for somebody who was good, but they didn't need, like a C.J. Spiller.
Right.
Terrell Troop instead of Rob Gronkowski. So what's the criteria? The production or the guy they could have had?
Just simply the worst pick. So you could also say, I mean, E.J. Manuel is obviously in the top of that list, but you could even say somebody like Sammy Watkins when you trade another first-round pick to move up and get him.
There were no other quarterbacks in EJ. Sammy, you trade up to get him. You could have had Odell.
Right.
You could have had Jarvis Landry. You could have had Mike Evans.
I mean, look, I'm looking at the Pro Football Reference right now, and first of all, there are no picks for the Bills left between the 2012, at least. I should probably do my math on this, but I believe 2015, 14, John Miller still left, 13, 12, 11. There's like one pick left from those years. And if you go down and you look at all the Pro Bowlers, the guys who have made the Pro Bowl since 08 that they've drafted, there are a total of 8 appearances among 50, 60 picks.
Mm-hmm. What is it, Jonah?
I'm just going to say, I don't even think there's an argument for anybody other than Aaron Maben. They drafted him number 11. They cut him 2 years later with 0 sacks. Like everybody else that you could name did at least one thing before they were kicked off. Most of them last more than 2 years, too.
I mean, my argument would probably be for E.J. Manuel. They traded down for him, true.
But he completed a pass.
He did.
4 yards, at least.
Right. and not much more. So,
I think there is an argument. I think it's a good debate because you do bring in the other factors of who you could have had. Now, Aaron Maben, the backstory on that was that. But why am I drawing a blank on the?
Oh, it was Russ Brandon,
The college scouting guy from Philly.
Tom Modrak.
So Tom Modrak and his scouting staff gave Dick Geron three players to choose from. He wanted a pass rusher. So the three options were Brian Arakpo, Brian Cushing, and Aaron Maben, with the belief and the explanation being is that Arakpo is the most NFL-ready. Cushing could be the best overall, but that Maben had the most upside because there was untapped potential there and could be better because we don't really know. And Dick Geron, his imagination was captured and went with Aaron Maben over the other two who've gone on to multiple Pro Bowls, of course, and Aaron Maben being out of the league.
Overthought it. I'm with Polo on Watkins as a strong candidate because you can talk about picks they made and what they did. They made a pick. They gave a first-round pick. They actually gave two, but the pick they gave away is a first-round pick they got nothing for. I see that as just a big, fat zero, even worse than a Maben pick.
But they got a second back in E.J. Gaines. You know, Aaron Maben
they gave it more than the firsts, too. But I'm just saying that's a defensible argument.
You lost E.J. Gaines, and he missed a lot of this year, you know. So, I mean, you did
it's
have
a pretty grim exercise,
point,
let's face it.
It is. And if you go through, let's say, the picks in the first three rounds, you have Aaron Maben, Eric Wood, Jairus Byrd, Andy Levitre, C.J. Spiller, Torrell Troop, Alex Carrington, Marcel Darius, Aaron Williams, Kelvin Shepard, Stephon Gilmore, Cordy Glenn, T.J. Graham, E.J. Manuel, Robert Woods, Kiko Alonso, Marquise Goodwin, Sammy Watkins, Cyrus Kwonjo, Preston Brown, Ronald Darby,
ooh,
John Miller, Shaq Lawson, Reggie Ragland, Adolphus Washington, Tredavious White,
people
Zay Jones.
People have zoned out. You're just
Deion
reading
Dawkins
off names.
Shaq Lawson's up there.
So how many of those
changed?
How many of those names? Point being, how many of those names have turned out to be
that's
legitimate NFL
than us
players?
To each other like whispering.
I agree.
Well,
I agree.
Let's go
of
to this.
Guys
then.
Did a little bit.
Let me read all of the. Let me give you the list of senators who've accepted money from the NRA.
Well, there's Twitter accounts for that. Well, let's look at even last year's draft, and I think this is becoming an increasingly interesting argument, is how did Sean McDermott do in last year's draft?
Because he didn't take Watson.
That's
what he did.
That's going to be the lingering question, is yes, they got Tre'Davious White by trading down. They got the extra first-round pick, but you passed up Deshaun Watson and you passed up Patrick Mahomes, and if they don't use that extra first-round pick this year on a quarterback, then there's going to be questions about that. There's questions about Zay Jones.
You think?
We all saw that. And then they've kind of made Nathan Peterman their pet project at quarterback, which Sean McDermott has very strongly defended him this offseason.
All right, please
we'll
call
see
in.
Where that goes.
270-1270. Let's somehow stop Mike Rodak from speaking for a couple of seconds.
Get him to stop, all right?
And help him out with his project. Who is the worst Bills draft choice?
Not only the worst, but the best as well.
Okay, yeah, but that's not as fun. And isn't that easier? Is it easier?
I don't know. My choices would come down to Eric Wood for his longevity and his durability for the most part. Stephon Gilmore probably is the best talent they've ever drafted.
How about
in the last
Stevie
10 years?
Johnson? Because it was so late in the draft. He was a seventh rounder, right? And he has three 1,000 yard receiving seasons.
He was.
So you can go with the
Kyle
unexpected
Williams
guy.
Right. That was outside of the frame now. That was 06 for Kyle.
Well, out of the frame. Sorry. You have the frame in
the
front
frame
of you.
The frame. And then, I mean, you can make an argument for Tre'Davious White, but I think that's still early. So.
270-1270. That's a 716
there
area
you go.
Code.
You're just
if
letting
you're
them go.
270-1270.
You're like a parent that yells at a kid, and then they go and do the same thing, and then you just ignore them and go get a beer or something. Are you going to punish him?
You know what?
Discipline or not?
There's two moves, really, for the dad, right? And there are only two dads in this room right now, but there are two moves. It's the bathroom, where you get your sanctuary, or like the garage or the shed type thing. Like, I got to go work on something just to get out of the house.
You know, you know me, I'm a bathroom guy. I don't have any tools. My wife has all the tools.
And then Tim's backyard's filled with bird feeders that he builds in his
That's garden. Right.
Polo, no children yet?
Just my dog.
Oh, okay.
That's it.
That's right.
Jonah?
No.
No
callers. Not people don't want to talk about the worst Bills draft choice like they wanted to talk about O.J. Simpson last week, apparently.
I must have missed that. How did that go?
Oh, yeah.
It was a fantastic. You know what? It was a great show, and whether or not that had anything to do with you being absent, I'm not sure, but
even I couldn't ruin it.
That's right.
We have tweets, though.
Mike McDonald was in here, and he was awesome on...
talented than I am.
On O.J. Simpson. He laid down some truths. Bills Stadium. Roger Goodell throws out a little hint that the Pegulas have begun work on... that's the worst-kept secret
work
in town, right? They've begun the process of whatever it is.
Thinking about it. No kidding.
Yeah. I think that they're a little farther along than just thinking about it.
Right.
But...
it's an advancement from where they were, at least in what Terry Pegula was saying publicly last year, both at the owners' meetings and in August during training camp when he said there was no planning happening on the stadium front. And then this week he gets asked about the opt-out in the lease in 2020. And he said it's something we discuss heavily internally, but not publicly. Which later had to be clarified to mean not the opt-out, they're not opting out, but just the general stadium discussion is being discussed, which is a change from how it used to be, or at least what he was saying before. And then you have Goodell come out today, and the NFL has said this in the past. Eric Grubman, who's one of the VPs, came out last year and said, yeah, the Bills are exploring it, but it seemed more specific from what Goodell was saying today. It seemed like there was greater progress or more knowledge of progress on Goodell's part that he was hinting at. And it was almost like, yeah, you know, I'll let the Pegulas, you know, tell you about it, but at the same time, he was telling us about it. So the cat was kind of out of the bag just in the way he was speaking.
Do we care? I mean, I brought the subject up, but, you know, I mean, there you have the thumbnail of what the update is with the stadium. It's really not a big update, and like I say, it's the worst-kept secret in town, but there's something about stadium talk that unless they start talking about plans or putting a shovel in the ground, it's really just... I find it incredibly boring because it's somebody else's money. Yes, it's going to be some state money, and there's going to be a debate as to whether or not that money should go to the schools. But the idea of keeping the stadium out in Orchard Park. I think a stadium should be in the city, much like I think that the community college campus should be in the city, and the city should be strengthened because a strong Buffalo is a strong Erie County. I've always believed that.
Who are you, Mark Poloncarz?
No, I'm Tim Graham, host of this show.
Well, we should have Poloncarz on one of these days.
Yeah, I would.
I would mainly be interested.
But I just think I'd like to see the stadium downtown, and really that's the only discussion is just like, hey, isn't it going to be cool if there's a stadium downtown? And of course it's going to take away a lot of the tailgating and some of the stuff, and good. It's going to eliminate a lot of the stuff that gives the Buffalo Bills a black
this
eye.
This is what makes it interesting, is that fans do like to debate, where should it be, what about tailgating? What about dome versus open air and, you know, weather and the elements? Like,
but we know it's coming anyway. So today's revelation doesn't really
because Pegula for the last couple of years kept saying, you know, we're just focused on this stadium. Even Russ Brandon was saying that.
Did anybody believe that?
No, but that's what they said.
And I don't think they're lying either. I don't think that they're lying when they say we're focused. They do. They have a lease and...
Right.
You know, they need to keep the politicians happy.
And the fans.
The state and the county just sank a lot of money into that stadium for improvements.
And they pandered to the fans that want to believe this idea, oh, we've got a stadium, it's fine. And they want to believe the Pegulas are lining up with them on that. They're not. They're in the league that's in the business of building stadiums. They're in the club.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only discussion I want to have, is stop pretending that the Pegulas think it's such a charming thing to be in that old bowl over there.
Right. It's the other 31 owners want the Bills to have a new stadium. They want all 32 teams to have even stadiums that really aren't that old. I've seen them talking about building a new stadium in Cleveland. I mean, that stadium
Pittsburgh.
Was built brand new right on the lake when the Browns came back in the late 90s. And they're like, well, I don't know. It's getting a lot obsolete. We need to find ways to maximize revenues.
Heinz Field in Pittsburgh opened in 02. And there's already talk about, should we build a new stadium and get a Super Bowl there? Because the current one is too small to host a Super Bowl.
Well,
that's how it works. But teams want to host Super Bowls. Cities want to host those. A lot of money in that.
All right, phone lines are open if you want to talk about the worst Bills draft pick since 2008 or the new stadium. Tell me how wrong I am that to be bored by the conversation. But I get it. But it's just such a poorly kept
secret.
It's
been going on for a while.
It's a fait accompli, and it's coming at some point. Let's talk about it when we know.
Five years in the making now.
Phone lines are up. 270-1270, 716-270-1270. when we come back from this on the Tim Graham Show, Sports Radio 1270 The Fan. Welcome back to the Tim Graham Show, Sports Radio 1270 The Fan.
How about it?
You guys, sorry to interrupt your conversation to do a radio show here. Or?
I'm prepping him a little
bit. This is the least. I had a guy tweet wanting to know what that elephant sound was during the first segment. Did somebody pass gas or was it an elephant? I think it was Bobby flapping at my NRA line.
Yeah, it was me.
We got the mics on. Yeah.
It's nothing I did.
Oh, it's the creakiness
of... when Jonah moved the mic over.
Oh, maybe that was it.
Oh, yeah.
Jerry and Jonah talking. Jerry and Mike Rodak talking.
I'm not talking right now. Well, I am, but I wasn't right then.
All right, you got to save that clip. We'll just keep playing that. Polo's the most professional guy on here, on this panel.
And an NBA fan.
FFS. All right, Rick and Tonawanda wants to add his thoughts on the Bills stadium discussion. Rick, what are your thoughts?
Guys.
And anything that happened today that sparked you to think anything differently?
Well, anytime Roger Goodell starts talking, I kind of chuckle a little bit. So, I've been to the Rock Pile when I was younger, and I was at Rich Stadium a lot of years. And I mean, I think everyone would love to have a nice, big, fancy stadium, 72 degrees, and you know, all year round and stuff. But at what cost? Who's going to go? People complain now about price of tickets, and we're what, the fifth lowest in the league. I mean, PSLs and all this other stuff. Is anybody going to be able to afford to go to a Bills game?
Well, I would think that the price point would have to stay. I guess they could justify a uptick in the prices just because they can say, there are going to be some fans, Rick, who are going to want to go just to check out the new stadium, or they're going to want to get season tickets because it's going to be a little bit more of a happening thing. And I'm sure that the Bills are hoping that they have a little bit of a track record by the time that this new stadium opens with Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean, and it's a lot more palatable to the fan base to go into a new home when you're not talking about a 20-year playoff drought. So there's a little bit of... I get what you're saying, Rick. I think you're probably going to pick up some fans, and you are also going to lose some fans.
And that's what I've always said or believed, is that as long as you have a winning team on the field, what else is there to do in Buffalo? I mean, people are going to be at that game one way or another.
That's true. I mean, right. I went for years, and... I mean, we had season tickets for me and my friends for 20 years. We won after the 2-14s, never missed a home game. You know, we were one of the 32,000 there throwing snowballs, but watching idiots.
Oh, not you, Rick. You wouldn't do that.
Nah, we're up in the high echelon, 31 rows up from the field, so on the shade side, unfortunately. But, you know, but those are fun days, and that's, you know, when you have a winning team, everyone wants to be there. And if we can, I have great faith in McDermott and company, and I'm hoping we do a kind of a Patriots thing. You know, we're going 15, 18 years of 10, 12, 14 wins every year. Wouldn't that be nice, huh?
And the Patriots, they blossomed as an organization in brand spanking new Gillette Stadium. And there's... And maybe it's a psychological thing, but there have been some teams that have gotten a new stadium right around the... I'm thinking about the Cleveland Indians. They were just dog meat for decades. And Jacobs Field opens right at the time, and it's like, hey, we got fans here who are excited to be here. There's some energy here. And they turned into a little, I don't want to call them a dynasty, but they were the best American League team for about a, I don't know, I mean, over the stretch.
Look at the Vikings.
Year to year. Yeah, the Minnesota Vikings.
And you had the Vikings, not only did they have a new stadium, but they just opened a new practice facility last week or 2 weeks ago, and it assigned Kirk Cousins. So sometimes those things start to snowball, and
yeah,
one builds on another.
You might be able to attract a free agent that you couldn't get before because they like, you know, you know, it's amazing. The Bills locker room of the last, 3 years it's been since they remodeled it. But
yep.
Prior to that, it was a joke. And
yep.
This was where these guys went to work every day. And it was, they had stools that they needed to use to get to the top of their locker because their lockers were so narrow
old
they couldn't
metal,
keep everything.
White like, high school lockers.
Like bins that you might slide under your bed or your kids, you know, throw their Legos in. I mean, that was the stuff that they were using. And so, facilities do matter for sure.
How about the Sabres? They're going to a new building down there. The next year they win the division. The next year after that they go to the conference final. And in 1999 they go to the finals. Coincidence? I ask you.
Well, yeah. I don't know the answer to that, Jerry. I don't think it's a magic potion, but not, it doesn't hurt.
Right.
I think what happens. I'm hopeful that... I still say we got a few years left out the old Ralph there.
Undoubtedly.
New era, but it just scares me because we're not, unless we get, again, regional teams, Syracuse, Rochester, Erie, Southern Ontario, we bring people in, good product and everything, maybe we can afford to do the, whoever knows how much it's going to cost to build something like that, and maybe have a convention center built into the place we can use and shut down that ugly monster we got downtown there.
Rick, before we let you go, do you have you want to help out Mike Rodak with his problem, the worst Bills draft pick since 2008?
I remember the one in, who was that guy from Texas, Mike Williams? Remember that right
tackle?
Yeah,
he would be before 2008, but that was a bad, that might
that
be the worst pick.
He disappointed me so much when he flopped like he did. But you can't really.
Aaron Maben, E.J. Manuel.
Oh, gosh, Maben.
Yeah.
Yeah, E.J., God, he had all the tools. It's just nothing's connected or something. But he looked, it reminds me of James Harris back in the day.
Yeah.
But it just wasn't connected. I don't know why.
Hey, and I'll let you know this, Rick, while you're here on the line, because you go back so far with the team. Speaking of former Bills quarterbacks, I'm learning here that and I happen to know him because he was a Las Vegas native and lived in Las Vegas while I was working in Las Vegas, and I got to know him very well. But David Hum, the former Bills and Raiders quarterback, passed away today.
Did he?
And, he had had MS. He'd been dealing with that for a good part of his life, but he still, up until just last season, I think, was still a part of the Raiders broadcast team. And he had a studio that Al Davis furnished him at his home in Las Vegas, and he would watch the games, and he would do the post-game show and things like that from his home in Las Vegas.
I covered him in college. I think he was at
Nebraska
when I was in Missouri.
What year was he in Buffalo?
Oh, it was early 70s, right? He was a backup for just a little bit.
A little later than
early 70s. When Dennis Shaw was there? And
well, see, now you're going to make me look things up, Rick? Come on, you're supposed to know
this
stuff.
Just saying, Dennis Hum, it doesn't ring. He must not have been here that long because I kind of remember most everyone that played back in the good old days.
David Hum, 1980, so he would have been Joe Ferguson's backup. He played 16 games, probably the holder. He only completed four of his 14 passes that year, and then he was off to the Baltimore Colts. But did play for the Oakland Raiders for 6 years.
What was his rookie year in the NFL?
75. He remained with the Raiders organization. He finished as an L.A. Raider in 83 and 84, and was just a favorite of Al Davis, and so he's been around for a long time, or at least with the Oakland Raiders family, and just as a former Bill, wanted to mention it. And I happen to know the guy. So.
It's sad.
All right, well, Rick, thanks for calling in.
You bet.
All right, so we're still talking about the worst draft pick. We're talking about the Bills stadium. Hey, these new NFL rules, we got to get into that. The NFL passed some new rules this week at the NFL owners' meetings. And the one that's most controversial is, for lack of a better phrase, I'll call it the lowering the head penalty.
Yeah.
It used to be the crown of the helmet, and you could take a pretty good look and see crown of the helmet, okay, and it would also be on certain plays, on tackles. Now they have a lowering the head penalty, 15 yards, you can get ejected for it, you can get fined for it, it's reviewable with replay now, for just lowering your head to not only tackle, but to block, to do anything. And last night at the Ritz-Carlton Hotel where the owners were having their meeting, I had a chance to talk with Jeff Miller, the Executive Vice President of Health and Safety, after the fact, and he was there with one of the NFL spokesmen, and I said, hey, did you guys expect to get the backlash that you got today or the response from the media? And Jeff Miller hadn't seen it. He's like, well, what are you talking about? And I was like, everybody's worried. Like, how can you enforce this thing? And the response from Jeff Miller and the NFL spokesman who were standing there was like, look, we have a couple of months to work that out. We know that there are some issues. But how about just the idea of the quarterback going for the extra yard on a quarterback sneak? I mean, how do you not lower your head on a quarterback sneak? That's all. Or how does a running back not try to get in over the goal line from, you know, third and goal from the two? I mean, how do you do this?
Did you see Richard Sherman's response? Because he always has to have something to say. But it was interesting. He said this is going to cause more lower body injuries. And he's got a point.
Go for the knees? Or
because, I mean, you're remaining upright in your more exposed lower body. I think most players would be worried more about that. I don't know what the answer is, but it seems kind of silly.
Well, one of the things that I think is interesting, well, the reason they're doing this is because the data shows the NFL on helmet-to-helmet hits just a couple of years ago, it was about one concussion for every three helmet-to-helmet hits that they could track that were flagged. Now it's about 1-to-1, meaning anytime you see a helmet-to-helmet play, whoa, there's a concussion. And so there's an issue there. What are your thoughts on that, Mike?
You caught me.
Yeah. Mike Rodak, like one of my students at one of my Canisius class, he's looking at some Miami Dolphins.
No,
he's looking at Armando Salguero's Twitter feed.
Yeah.
Dolphins. He's not even
right.
Listening.
It was just an interesting photo.
He's not even listening to what I'm saying.
Typical Rodak.
Yeah, crooked Rodak.
Typical Rodak looking at pictures of Bill Belichick, but an interesting picture of him sitting in the lobby of the Dolphins facility today.
I don't find that interesting at all.
Well, look, I agree that there's obviously issues with how it's going to be enforced. I mean, Mike Florio wrote about that either this morning or last night. Goodell addressed it today, and I think Goodell actually said, oh, it's going to be easier to enforce than people think, which, you know, I have a hard time squaring that with the rule, but I don't know. I think it's... We're going to have to wait and see until there's an actual game and see how strictly it is enforced. I know, as Florio mentioned a couple years ago, there was an addition to the rule book about, was it leading with the crown of the helmet, I think it was, and how...
Yeah, I was talking about that.
Right. And how they
like
would only...
Minutes, bro.
And how they would only enforce the most egregious of those penalties.
Mm-hmm. Using big words is not going to take
this
way
is,
out.
This is why, Tim, I'm going to be watching the AAFL and the XFL, because they won't have those kind of rules.
Yeah,
291 concussions in the NFL last
the
year.
Field
one other thing that I thought was even more provocative, well, maybe not more provocative, but it kind of slipped through and I think is something to watch, is Mark Murphy,
yep,
the Green Bay Packers president, who's a Western New Yorker, yeah, Clarence High School graduate, came out and said today that if the NFL can't figure out, or if coaches can't figure out a way to make kickoffs safer, that they will eliminate the kickoff. And they're putting it with the coaches. The data shows that you are 5 times as likely to get a concussion on a kickoff play than any other play in the game. It's the most dangerous play in the game. And even the touchback rules that they've had, they have fewer kickoff returns than ever. That was a desired result. Now you also get, you know, the ball at the 25. That was passed. That's a permanent rule now. It had to have been something they were just experimenting with. But even without the returns, you still have the collisions of the blockers and everybody who, you know, there's the ball is still in the air. And you, what happens is, an unintended consequence of the touchback is, defenders might ease up because they see the guy taking a knee or the ball go out of the end zone, and one of the blockers doesn't know, so the guy slows up for a step and gets crushed. And so guys are still getting concussions at the same rate on kickoffs, yeah, even though there are fewer returns.
I thought the kickoff was going to be taken out of the game several years ago. I remember the late Bruce DeHaven, when he had a second stint as special teams coach, when they moved the kickoff, he said, oh, it's off the record, but Jerry, they're just worried about injuries and litigation. That's why they're doing, yeah, this. And he predicted they would eliminate kickoffs eventually.
It's just tough because, well, you have like players that make their careers off,
yeah,
kickoffs.
Right,
though. I
right.
Mean,
and those players
and
are
Dante, I mean, Hall, Devin Hester,
right,
yeah, Kareem Hunt.
Think of one of those players this past season. What electric kickoff return can you think of? It's,
yeah, we waited all year.
It's harder.
Yeah.
Tyreek Hill.
Yeah, but even then, he's
Hill,
morphed into more of an offensive
that's
player
what I
than
thought
a special teams,
see,
player.
Paul, that's all right. I'm going to allow you a slip-up every now and then. Crooked Rodak gets no slack.
But I
or does Jerry.
I would be interested to see the total numbers. I believe it was the last two seasons where they've had it.
Bobby's due for an on-air belch soon.
Yeah.
For
the whole show.
Out.
I'm just going to walk out the door and throw a match back in the studio and just leave.
But when they moved up the kickoff or
are you
the touchback to 25 yards, they were trying to give more incentive for kickers to have a touchback. But really what happened was kickers tried to pop it up and catch teams inside 5 or 10 yards.
Yeah,
and that created more problems with returns as well. So
if there's no kickoff, what happens, like late game situations, there's no onside kick?
Yeah, there's no urgency to the game anymore.
All right, we're going to get it. We'll stay with that. We'll stay with rules changes. Bill Stadium talk if you want it. Hey, if you still want to come and rip me about OJ, come on the show. Absolutely.
I haven't had my chance yet.
All right, we'll talk about it.
That was more fun.
That was good times. It was good times last week. I took on all comers. I'm a reasonable guy. I agree with some of the criticism. I'm not going to fight you over it. 270-1270, call in the show. Phone lines are open. Tim Graham Show, Sports Radio 1270 The Fan, the most professional show in Western New York. Welcome back to the Tim Graham Show, Sports Radio 1270 The Fan. Talking about a lot of things so far, mostly football. In fact, entirely football.
Yeah, that's great.
Bill Stadium stuff. Oh, I'm sorry, Jerry. We're supposed to...
April's my favorite month because of basketball and baseball and like, but... Heaven forbid that someone from the Bills should utter a word about the stadium, or they should change a rule about people killing themselves with their heads. No, that's, I'm not bitter. I know it's provocative stuff.
I'm Jerry. I forgot I was supposed to tee you up so you could gloat. Jerry Sullivan.
I've been gloating to him, and he won't take the bait. You know, he's too polite.
It's playoff basketball. Jerry doesn't want to talk about rule changes.
Jerry Sullivan chose in the paper for the world to see.
In a big bracket.
Big bracket, not multiple brackets where he gets to throw a bunch out there with different scenarios. His commitment was to this one bracket, and he had Loyola of Chicago going to the Final Four. And I've told people that when I was down at the owners' meetings, and they're like, no, he didn't. Oh, you know who I told was Brandon Bean.
Oh, did he?
He didn't believe it. And I said, it was in the paper.
You like me. I sound like
I do.
Sally Field. You really like me.
I like Sally Field. How about when you see Sally Field when she's in like...
Who are your other three teams?
Michigan.
So you got
and then on the other side, I blew up. I had Michigan State and West Virginia.
Okay.
So my theory was it was so balanced this year that ones and twos wouldn't... None of the ones and twos would make it. And I also predicted... predicted a 16 would win, but I picked the wrong one.
Who'd you pick, Penn?
I picked, in honor of the late Alan Wilson, I picked North Carolina Central. I'm not even sure they won the 16-16 play-in game.
They may have been the first.
So that's usually my bracket. I picked a team one year that were the first team eliminated. I picked teams. You know, I have fun with it. But there is picking a team from the Valley used to make a lot of sense. I thought it was really, really high mid-major. Now they've lost Wichita State, but still, I thought Loyola was a really, really good team.
Why, in terms of the matchups, did you see that? I mean, what is it about the way things broke down at the time you're filling out the bracket, not using how you saw them play to get into the Final Four, Jerry, to justify your
I also
your pick.
Thought that was the weakest region, which it proved to be. I mean, it's crazy. Michigan, I love them, picked them to win it all, but they haven't beaten anybody better than a 6 to get to the Final Four. The whole thing went crazy. I think this is Virginia's side, right? The Baltimore County? Maybe I got my things mixed up. But I know I saw a weak bracket there. I know that. And 11 beats 6 actually more than half the time in the last 8-9 years. So once you get by that game, when these things happen, there's generally upsets opposite them that make their road a little easier. And I think Loyola benefited from some of that. I think they had to beat, what, K-State? Again, I get some of these teams are all alike to me. That's why I want more mid-majors. To me, you know, Florida State, Kansas State, Texas Tech, they're all the same team to me. They're all 8s and 9s that really aren't as good as
Xavier, Gonzaga, some of these teams. All the same thing.
Now, Xavier, I picked them to go down because they were a weak number one.
Do you know what state Xavier's in?
Yeah, it's in Ohio. It's in Cincinnati. My son went there
as a freshman.
I just
found that out today. Oh, okay.
You kids today.
Yeah.
Even Bronstein didn't know where Idaho was. You guys ever look at a map?
I didn't know where Gonzaga. I didn't know where Gonzaga was.
Well, Gonzaga.
They're in Washington or
something. There's many Xaviers and there's many Loyolas. I'm just teasing, but now he has to defend himself.
I mean, Jerry, you buy maps just
you
for
thought,
fun.
I do.
Like, you don't even need them. I'm gonna buy a map.
He saw me on the road buy a map. I do it all. My wife just yelled at me. He goes, "You buying another map?" No, that's the reason they have maps at these rest stops for me. No one else buys a physical map.
Colors them in with colored pencils.
All right, so you caught me.
What the colored pencils? What's that?
I don't know what he's talking about.
That was a joke.
What did you think of Chris Mack leaving Xavier for Louisville? I mean, you're going from one major conference to another and going to a program that just got decimated by not sanctions, but obviously an investigation.
$28 million.
I think the money is a big thing. That place is corrupt for a reason. I mean, I've read a story about what's happened there with all the money that came in to build all these things and turn it into a little corporation. And I think there's a point where you've been at one place too long. God bless Boeheim. He never went for that. He stayed in one place his whole career. Chris Mack is now underachieved in the tournament a couple times, although last year he went far. I think that he might have figured it's time. It was a tough call, though. I mean, this is Xavier's alma mater. It's his dream job.
Right.
And he jumps to Louisville. And if you really want my feeling, it's why on one level I hate this stuff so much, that stuff like that can happen.
Well, it's
the
like
money
this,
can just buy a guy off.
This intense need to, like, be in the ACC. I mean, if you're in that conference, it's been dominated by Duke and North Carolina for a long, long time, to Syracuse more recently.
Yeah, but it's the shoe money, and it's the all these guys, if you're in the ACC, you have your own television show
but you're,
that you get paid for beyond your contract.
You're in the
and
shadow
a radio
of those,
show and,
those bigger teams still.
Oh, I know. And you get to recruit. You get a bigger brand of recruit is at least going to give you the time of day.
Like, I can somewhat see Hurley going from URI to UConn because of the money. URI's not going to pay very well, but even like UConn, that team has been decimated the last few years. They're not what they used to be. I don't know. Some of these moves don't make a whole lot of sense to me. But
I sense
what
some
do I
Providence
know?
Bitterness here, but I don't blame you.
No. I mean, was just gonna bring as a Providence fan, I might actually be happy that he's leaving URI, because that program over the last couple of years was looking stronger, was on a more
Polo,
upward
talk about
trajectory.
UB. Nobody listening to this cares about, other than Mike's
well,
mother.
I was simply responding to
well, I was just
an
bring
accusation.
It, let's bring it around to UB, Polo.
Yeah, they have
the only guy in this effing studio who has any kind of radio sense.
Well, I mean, they have a good coach. They looked okay in the tournament. Should they stay in the MAC conference, or should they look to move where they are and possibly get more scholarships, get more money, get more attention?
Get where would they
Bucky
go?
Put that focus. Bucky's angle is they should get to a bigger league. Like
the American?
Some kind of American mid-major.
There's nowhere for them to go right now.
That's the issue.
I mean, Bucky
has
written about they could drop football down a level and maybe get basketball into the Atlantic 10, but they don't want to do that, and I don't think
that
makes sense.
They don't put any effort into their football team anyway, I feel.
Well, but they do, and they haven't succeeded with football yet, but they still want to. They still want to turn that into a revenue-producing thing and the exposure that it gets.
And there's no way they can change. They can either drop down football or change out of the MAC having with this new facility that they're building. They can't have solicited this money, and then all of a sudden it would be a waste. It would just be throwing money down the toilet.
And they're only 20-something years, 20 years into being a Division I football program. It's too early. The reason they're in this mess now is because they dropped football in 1970-whatever, I think in the late 60s, and they can't do that again. They'll never have a Division I football program again if they drop now. Plus, nobody drops. I mean, you know, it sounds good in theory, but what school has dropped down? There's teams that have never moved up, and they wouldn't even be dropping out of Division I, but dropping out of BCS or FBS. Nobody's ever dropped down. They only move up. Or the one school did drop down, but there was reasons why, and they were kind of lessening the athletic department overall. This isn't a move that other schools, there isn't a model where you say, well, they moved their football program down, elevated basketball, elevated these other sports. That's uncharted territory, and I don't think they can do that unless the thing is we want to lessen athletics overall. That would be the only way they would do that.
You said the key word. There's no model, and I know Bucky's argument. The model, I wish they could be the Gonzaga, Xavier, Villanova model, a standalone kind of program where there's no other that is the sport, because right now they're that type of team. The model when Bill Greiner went there in the early 90s, I was around then, was the Big Ten model. That was the league they wanted to be like. A academic institution of their size, that's where they would fit. But
and they still, I think, want that eventually, but they need to, really, they need bigger crowds. They're not going to the Big Ten right now drawing only 8,000 people into this dumpy old stadium that they have. They need to engage the fans to the point where it was a market that the Big Ten would want to be in. And maybe they get there eventually, but they're not there now.
And we can talk about this a little bit more in the next hour. I know Jerry won't be here, but I want to change the subject real quick. Jim Kelly, the Buffalo Bills' legendary quarterback, is having some surgery today. And from what I understand from some people who I know who are following it closely, the surgery is still going on. It was supposed to take several hours today. I've been told it's going well.
I haven't really seen specifically out there what's being done, but one of the parts of this is he's having a part of his skull removed, and that there was going to be a delay in which he was going to kind of be exposed for a little bit, but the surgery has gone so well today that they're grafting the bone, from what I've been told, and that's taking place today, too. So encouraging enough that, I mean, it's obviously I don't know how radical it is from a medical standpoint, but it is a major surgery, and to remove more cancer in Jim Kelly's head. And but it seems to be going better than they anticipated.
Yeah, it's taking part of his fibula from his leg and using that to fill a hole that was left in his upper jaw from his previous surgery 4 years ago. That was causing him some pain. So this is actually planned even before his recent diagnosis of he has cancer again. Once they found that out, it was, let's do more, a bigger surgery. And this is a more extensive replacement of the upper jaw that they hope is, A, going to eradicate the cancer, but B, also alleviate some of the pain that he's been having.
Yeah. So I guess good news on a dicey day for Jim Kelly.
God, everyone that battles cancer is heroic in a way. Kelly is the toughest player I ever saw. There's a point where you're just like, Jim, nothing can beat this guy. And you hope that is the truth. After a while, it's like you almost want to, I don't know, take just a tiny bit of his pain, have every Bills person, every Buffalo person, take a little bit away from him. It's just, God, it's just got to be so tough. But, you know, he's got the spirit. It's just hope.
Bucky Gleason, our columnist at the Buffalo News, wrote a very poignant column saying that cancer probably, by the time it's all over, will have wished it picked somebody else to go up against than Jim Kelly. Mm-hmm. And so some encouraging words, I think, at least from what I'm being told by some of the old guard Bills players who are rallying around and thinking about Jim and relaying news. A lot of anxious former Bills today worrying about their quarterback, Jim Kelly. Jerry Sullivan, thanks for coming in, as always.
You're welcome. And I did hear last time you talked about me always leaving at 5 and going into that traffic with
yeah.
90.
What's the deal with that? Shouldn't you just stick around for an hour?
It's become a sport for me. I'm getting better at it.
Oh, God.
But one of these days you're going to hear the sirens and go, well, the bad news
Jerry
finally
didn't make
occurred.
It. Jerry,
blending in didn't quite work out today for
Jerry.
Jerry
tried to go through the breakdown lane for a little too long. All right, thanks. Polo Kerber is going to stick
Watch
around for another hour.
Watch those tolls going up. It's going to be problems.
Big Crooked. He's going to try to rally for the second hour. He's had a rough first half of the show.
Just
but,
trying to get that game ball.
We got your back. I don't know if that's going to happen this week.
A lot of people come out hot after the halftime break.
That's right.
Rip it out of Polo's hands.
You need to make some halftime adjustments, Mike.
Okay. Yeah, Jerry wants his first game ball. He's speaking, not into a microphone.
That's right. Jerry is murmuring. You're like the uncle
audio.
In the corner, like you said earlier. You're off in the corner of the studio, not near a microphone, mumbling about something. We don't know. And he's still going. The award-winning, the Marconi Award-winning Tim Graham Show coming at you some more after this break. Sports Radio 1270 The Fan. Welcome back to the Tim Graham Show, Sports Radio 1270 The Fan, here with Big Crooked, ESPN.com's Mike Rodak. He's working on a project, and he would like your help. And I think it's been pretty scattered, the responses that we've seen, a lot of them on Twitter. Feel free to call in at 270-1270 to make your case for the worst Bills draft pick of the past decade. This is for ESPN.com, so you could actually influence
the Big Crooked,
the great Mike Rodak, and his coverage of your Buffalo Bills. You've always complained about Mike Rodak. You hate Mike Rodak.
See, now I'm going to be accused of being negative that I'm picking the worst draft pick.
Well, then we should be clear. We should be
with the positive,
right?
It is also the best draft. It's one of the it's one of each,
right?
We just think it's a tougher pick.
It's a compelling argument.
Okay, so who is the best though? I like the Stevie Johnson case. Oh, wait, I guess I need to hang on one sec. I'm sorry. Polo Kerber from Hey Man Studios in the cellar at 569 Elmwood. He's here.
How you doing?
Awesome return guest. Jonah Bronstein handling things for Facebook Live, so you can see a live stream of this show and all previous Tim Graham shows on the Buffalo News' Facebook page. And resident knob diddler Bobby Rosati, he's here too. So, yeah, go ahead, Mike. I'm sorry.
Well, the best pick, I mean, it depends on the context. Like, Eric Wood, as a first-round pick, started a lot of games. Was never a great player. I mean, he made one Pro Bowl. Stevie Johnson outperformed expectations. Stephon Gilmore was probably the most talented pick in the last 10 years. Signed a huge deal with the Patriots, which could be considered a sign of success for him.
I think it's too soon to pick anybody from the last couple of years. You need at least a little bit of a body of work. As much as we are encouraged and like what we've seen out of Tre'Davious White.
Right.
I mean, we've seen Bills cornerbacks have great starts and then slide for some reason.
Here's another stat for you. In the past 27 years, going back to 1991, there have been only three Bills draft picks who have gone on to be first-team All-Pros. Marcell Dareus, Marshawn Lynch, and Henry Jones. That's it.
Was Marshawn while he was with Buffalo, or was that in Seattle?
I believe that was in Seattle.
In the past how many years?
27.
Yeah. Well, we only need to go back 10, Mike.
Right.
So let's narrow things down for the listeners.
I don't want to be too negative.
Yeah, that's true.
Mm-hmm.
Henry Jones is outside of the past decade, as is Marshawn Lynch.
Right.
So if you wanted to go with the All-Pro, it would be Marcell Dareus, right? Does he fit?
Yeah,
I mean Marcell Dareus, but who else could you have had? And Polo, you were talking about some of those names. You could have had Marcell Dareus, even though he was first-team All-Pro. He was suspended. He was disciplined all the time, whether it be internally by Doug Marrone or by the NFL for multiple things, for crashing his car, for synthetic weed, for he went
failing
to drug rehab.
But
he underperformed his contract.
Yep.
And all of the players that the Bills could have had.
AJ Green was the next pick.
AJ Green,
Patrick Peterson, Julio Jones, J.J. Watt.
Those guys are pretty good.
And ultimately, Dareus was traded for pennies and a dollar. It was a fifth-round pick they got back. So
yeah. So well, there's always all kinds of ways to debate it, which is what makes this a fun exercise.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe you know what would be funny to do? How about if you do Marcell Dareus as the best and the worst? He was the best in terms of accolades and the fact that he actually made an impact, and then you could say he was the worst because of all the extenuating circumstances.
Yeah, I mean, if there wasn't such egregious examples as Maben or E.J. Manuel or even Sammy Watkins, I think I could get away with that. But in this case, I think there's too many. I mean, Cyrus Kwonjo, second round, and James Hardy, but
Terrell Troop, one
God
pick ahead of Rob
guys.
Gronkowski. Oh, you can list guys.
Oh,
I think
it's
just reading off a list for about 45 straight seconds.
Some people like to hear all those names and reminisce about
not coming
all
out
the,
of your mouth.
The good times. Yeah, well, doesn't live up to my standards of things coming out of my mouth, I guess.
I see. Polo, do you have an answer? Have you settled on anybody yet?
No. My gut, best I would say, probably Stephon Gilmore. Worst I would say Sammy Watkins, just because of what we were kind of mentioning with who you could have gotten. Not to say that Sammy Watkins is the worst talent by any means, but just, the players that you could have gotten, especially trading up to get him and then losing a draft pick. You could have stayed where you were, gotten Odell Beckham, or a couple other players, Mike Evans, and I think that's kind of rough there.
I had it here on Twitter. I would give credit if I had it still here in front of me, but so I'm stealing the point from a listener who posted this on Twitter, is that I want to take a step back, and I think I'm settling on E.J. Manuel because he was the Bills never go after quarterbacks. So you take a look at the numbers compared to the rest of the league. The Bills are far and away gluttons for running backs over their history and never really drafted quarterbacks. You have Jim Kelly, J.P. Lossman, and E.J. Manuel, the only three quarterbacks taken in the first round by the Bills. And E.J. Manuel was the first one taken with their first pick.
Tony Hunter, I think it was drafted in the first round ahead of Jim Kelly. And then J.P. Losman, the year that he went first overall, I'm drawing a blank, but he or Go not for. First overall, I should say, but the year he went in the first round,
yep.
He was late. You know, everybody knows they traded back up. Was that the Travis Willis McGahee draft?
Lee Evans? Yeah, McGahee.
And J.P. Losman the same year? Thanks, Jonah. So the Bills' quarterback drafting has always been with an asterisk. So they finally go into a draft saying, we're going to get the best quarterback in this year's draft class. And the class was so weak that the Bills felt comfortable enough to trade back and still take the first quarterback off the board in E.J. Manuel. Then they realized that this guy needs a lot of help, and we're going to need to overextend ourselves by drafting Sammy Watkins with two first-round draft picks. And so that's why I want to say E.J. Manuel. He was a disappointment. The Bills bankrupted their short-term future.
It hurts because they took a quarterback, but looking at this draft, there wasn't really anybody in it.
Right.
Tavon Austin
terrible
was a top
draft.
10 pick.
Right. So right. Wait until the next year. Rather than saying we have to have a quarterback, say, yeah. Sorry, fans, but we just didn't think there was one for us. And then you know what? It would have bore itself out over time because everybody would have seen E.J. Manuel play, and they would have seen Geno Smith. There was no quarterback in that draft class that years later Bills fans would have been like, oh,
true.
You guys blew it.
And it's as if people were projecting E.J. to be a first-round pick. He was
a third or fourth round pick projected. That was the other shocker.
If you don't take E.J. that year, though, and then they have a high pick the next year, do the Bills end up with Blake Bortles? And then you're in that same discussion. They could have had, you know, Odell, Sammy Watkins, blah, blah, blah.
Right.
And then you took Blake Bortles instead. And then he's not that good either. You're in that same discussion.
Or you go back to the 04 draft when they traded back into the first round because they needed J.P. Losman. The pick that they used was a 2005 first-round pick. And they could have used that pick on a guy named Aaron Rodgers. But, you know.
270-1270. Help out the big crooked with this project.
So what about the fact that they did trade down, got, I think, the pick that they used on Kiko Alonso.
Yes.
Traded him for LeSean McCoy. Does that help that pick, even though it's not really related to selecting E.J. Manuel, but it goes hand in hand with that draft?
I think how great would it have worked out, though, if they traded back and got a player that was serviceable plus Kiko Alonso? You know,
right.
I think it was the idea that they invested so – not only did they draft E.J. Manuel, but they then invested so much in him at the peril of the rest of the team. They didn't bring in competition because they didn't want to threaten him. They didn't want to unsettle his development or whatever. He had to feel the confidence and the support of the team, and they just bent over backwards for a guy who wasn't that good. And there really wasn't anything other than his – obviously, his measurables, the things that you see at the combine. He looked the part. He threw a pretty pass through air. He was inaccurate, and he ran, yes, but he also was injury prone. So every positive came with a negative that, but there was really no point where he was in a Bills uniform, whether it be in mini camp or training camp or preseason games, where you thought, this guy is the future.
No.
There was always. Maybe.
Even that first win that he had against Carolina, I think it was week 2 of 2013, he had that last-second touchdown pass to Stevie Johnson. Everybody was going crazy. Hackett was running through the press box.
Which wouldn't have been possible if Luke Kuechly doesn't have a pass interference play on a questionable defensive pass interference.
Well, he almost got picked off.
Yeah.
That was the thing. EJ almost threw a pick, I believe, the play before.
Yeah.
So there's things like that. I remember writing about that day. I said, well, it's encouraging that he won the game, but damn near lost the game, too. And fans were jumping on me, like, oh, you got to believe in EJ. I just didn't see it. And I still think that was the downfall of Doug Whaley more than anything else, was his insistence on EJ Manuel. And you can look on the opposite and say, yeah, Whaley brought in LeSean McCoy. Well, by their own admission, those guys, Rex and Russ Brandon and Doug Whaley, are all sitting on the yacht, the Pegula's yacht, drinking red wine.
Chip Kelly threw LeSean McCoy at the Bills and
they
said, here, take
it. They weren't looking for him. They weren't making the offer. It was like, hey, take him. Like, a computer could have made that. It's like Ryan Gregson in Indianapolis. Everybody says, oh, he drafted Andrew Luck. I mean, you could have set a computer to auto-draft, and he would have gone number one that year. It's you can't credit guys for that.
I might have to switch to E.J. Manuel because I'm looking at the pick that the Bills gave up the year after, and there's not that much talent around there either. I mean, Nelson Aguilar and Landon Collins later in the first pick of the second round, but it's not like they missed, you know, a superstar player where, you know, if you didn't trade that first-round pick to get Sammy, you would have some superstar guy. So, yeah, might have to switch up to E.J. Manuel.
Yeah, it really fractured the organization in many ways. And you think about how, you know, Doug Marrone saw it right away, or he had the fight with that you chronicled, right, Mike?
Yeah,
there was he and Whaley and Jim Monas were on the field yelling at each other, and they later said it was about Lee Smith or something like that. But you know,
they said they only made up over beers that night or something is what
right.
they said.
And
they
then
downplayed it.
And then, of course, you don't need to see an argument on the practice field when the next season. Doug Marrone brings in Kyle Orton off the street.
A week before the season.
Yeah, that he'd rather have Kyle Orton off his couch
right.
than he would E.J. Manuel.
And that was always Whaley's downfall, especially that second offseason of him as GM, the 2014 offseason, where I can remember sitting and talking to him and asking about quarterback, and he said, you know, I think we're all set with what we got. E.J. Manuel, Thad Lewis, because, you know, backup quarterback, you want us to win you 50% of the games.
And he almost did.
He went 2-3 the previous year. And Jeff Toole was their third quarterback. And Whaley's like, yeah, you know, I think we're all set with that group. Everything's fine.
It reminds me of what Terry Pegula said yesterday when talking about the quarterback situation.
Yeah.
And with a smile on his face said, we're pretty happy with A.J. McCarron and Nathan Peterman.
Well, he said not only that, he said, we don't think it's as bad as people think, is essentially the quote, which hasn't gotten a lot of play, but that's an interesting one.
I took that, and I was there. I was standing right next to Terry Pegula when he said it, and to me, it seemed like a reflexive phrase to turn in that situation of, we always take a lot of heat. It's not as, I don't think he was saying, I think it was an empty phrase. If I can explain myself any worse, I don't think. But I think he was saying
there,
it's not as bad as you think it might be, as though he was assuming we thought it was bad, and we were like, because that's what he's used to, right? His hockey team is awful, and his team has just ended a 17-year playoff drought. And I think it was just kind of a, you know, just something to say as to a way to be like, yeah, gosh, guys, it's not as bad as.
Weren't they all empty phrases? The whole presser.
Most of it, yeah.
The whole "this is my poker face," which is like
the thing I will say
I'm
about
lying to you,
Terry Pegula is that yesterday it's the first time that I've really seen him in a. It was a small group. It was two members of BuffaloBills.com were there: Vic Carucci and me, John Scott from Spectrum, Sal Capaccio from WGR,
John Crick
from Toronto, and I think that was it. So six people or whatever it is. And he was loose. And usually in those situations, he is uptight. He doesn't want to be there. He's prickly. And he was shaking hands with everybody, putting an arm around over your shoulder. How you doing? Yeah, let's do this. And he was a little nervous. You could hear his voice in his voice. He's a little nervous to get started because he's uncomfortable in front of camera. Well, there's only one camera at Bills.com. But he had a smile on his face. He was loose. He didn't really give you a lot like a politician. You never really get a ton out of Terry, but I will say that it was like one of those deals where afterwards I'm thinking, this guy might be coming along a little bit finally
totally.
In terms of his feeling comfortable. I think you're able to get away with it in the NHL, and you can't say he's been an owner since the day he bought the Sabres. It's different. In the NHL, you don't have these big meetings where you go to the Ritz-Carlton and the media is swarming the place, and you don't have these expectations and little news conferences like you do in the NFL. It was a whole new world for him coming into the NFL when it comes to fan expectations, what the public feels it is owed in terms of information, what the media feels it's owed in terms of access. And so I think I'm encouraged, and hopefully it wasn't an anomaly yesterday, and I think that when getting to the playoffs helps.
Well, I think last year, too, there was a change. They were very closed off up until everything went south with Whaley and Rex, and then you eventually had Tim, you had the interview, and then after that, the floodgates kind of opened. I think they realized that they needed to be more open, because then Terry spoke at the owners' meetings last year, and that was the first time in my 3 years of doing it when he was the owner that he had done that. And he was relatively loose then. Then he came out again after Whaley was fired and had the press conference. He came out in training camp, and he's been on the radio a few times. So I think they've realized that you can't hide and have Doug Whaley, for instance, be sitting up at the podium as he was after Rex was fired and say that he's not privy, and that was just a disastrous look. So I think they've realized that he does need to be, Terry needs to be the face of the franchise in some ways.
We're going to come back after this and have more Bills Stadium talk. We're going to talk about the new rules in the NFL, especially this lowering of the head rule, which seems dubious at best, but the NFL says it's going to sort this out over the next couple of months and how they're going to actually enforce this penalty. And Polo, would you like to know what O.J. Simpson thinks about Sam Darnold to the Buffalo Bills?
Ooh, yeah.
We're going to hear O.J. Simpson on Sam Darnold going to the Buffalo Bills after this break on the Tim Graham Show, Sports Radio 1270 The Fan. Welcome back to the Tim Graham Show, Sports Radio 1270 The Fan. In a second, we're going to hear from O.J. Simpson what he thinks of USC quarterback Sam Darnold going to the Buffalo Bills. Just because.
Yeah, because.
Big Crooked.
Necessary.
Big Crooked is interested. Cricket. Polo Kerber from the Hey Man Studios in the Cellar. Do I just want to say the Cellar now? We still do Hey Man Studios, don't we?
Yeah, you can say whatever you want.
Well, that's true, but I want to say it the right way.
Keep it the way it is.
It'll be number 8, the OJ 8 file, Bobby, when we get to playing it for
might be moving
Sam
out to
Darnold.
L.A.
Permanently?
Yeah.
What are you going to do with the Cellar?
I mean, I have two business
partners. At 569
partners,
Elmwood
Avenue. 569 Elmwood. I have two business partners. They can
So you're going to keep it, so you'll still, yeah, you're not going to sell it to them? You'll still be involved?
I don't know. I'm not sure yet. I'm still trying to figure everything out.
If I could pick anywhere in the country to live,
it would not be Los Angeles.
It would be. That's my spot. Yeah. There's something about Southern California when I'm there. That's the vibe, and people talk about that, and you think, oh, it's just the vibe of being out in the sun, and it's not. There's something else to it, and I don't really know. I can't put my finger on it, but when I'm out there, I feel I have this sense of this is where I'm supposed to be.
I've been back and forth out there since the All-Star weekend, just back and forth.
Tell us what the business plans are. Why do you have to move to L.A.?
Well, Nick is out there.
Right. Nick is the artist
from the
Heyman Studios who does
the
customized cleats.
Exactly. So he would be out there, and then I've just been doing like a little bit more of like working with athletes as far as like booking autograph signings, meet and greets, our little, you know, public appearances or charity events, things like that. And, you know, the only player I really have left in Buffalo that I work with is LeSean McCoy. So, I mean, if he's gone, that's all I got.
You have 8 teams out there, right?
8 teams out
there.
2
of everything. 2 of the big fours. You also can
even have players that live there in the off season.
Auto racing has been, you know, in the last 20 years is even a thing out there now. Not that I don't know if you'd get into auto racing, but you love all sports. You probably, hey, if there's an
opportunity, I'll take it.
Absolutely.
Got to take it.
That's what I love about Polo Kerber. Guy's a hustler, man.
Yeah.
In a good way.
Jonah
Bronstein's here.
My hustler?
You absolutely are a hustler.
Yeah.
You're one of my all-time favorite people.
Mike Rodak has 10 phones. He's a hustler.
It's true.
That's right. He's got a burner.
Yeah.
How do you even have enough outlets at your house to charge all your phones?
So I went on Overstock.com, and I bought 8 chargers recently.
See?
For like 1/10 of the price on the Apple store. It was perfect. And they're OEM,
their
original
Apple.
Yeah.
Wow.
And they work fine.
Alex, I should say, Tom Telesco in this past free agency period has not bought 8 chargers.
Ah. That was a good one. So every single outlet in my house has one now. So if I'm on my couch, if I'm at my desk, if I'm in my bed, if I'm in my kitchen,
at what point do
I have outlets or I have chargers?
Polo, at what point can we stop pretending like we care anymore? Like we don't need...
I think people care more about that than they do about other things that are discussed on this show.
Okay. Jonah Bronstein, he's handling things for Facebook Live. We had a little technical glitch, so we have 2 files. You can, right? Is that right?
If you were watching earlier,
you just got to switch over to the
updated better
link.
Wireless connection now.
All right. Bobby Rosati, he's diddling the knobs, as he do. So, hey, O.J. Simpson. What was that? It was like a bee just went in my ear. What is, let's see.
That was my chair.
Let's hear what O.J. Simpson has to say about Sam Darnold.
For his sake, I hope it ain't Darnold.
Not a fan?
No, I'm a big fan. I'm a big fan of Darnold, but I know Darnold don't want to go to Cleveland, and he wouldn't really want to go to Buffalo. I'm hoping for his sake he goes to Denver. Because he, to me, stepping in, whichever one of those guys go to Denver might have instant success, because with Demaryius Thomas and Sanders, they got two really great wide receivers and a good defense that's going to really, you know, good defense makes all the difference in the world. You know, you got to, you know, I always say what hurt me in Buffalo for the good and bad years was the games we were out of the game in the fourth quarter.
Yeah.
You know, and when you're out of the game in the fourth quarter, you're throwing the ball.
So O.J. Simpson, the pride of, well, he went to USC.
Is anybody proud?
Yeah, well, hey, they proudly display that number 32 in the Coliseum every time there's a game.
There's a large deer outside.
There's
the
multiple all the time.
Before, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Let's open up those blinds. I'll look at deer. I like looking at deer while I'm on the show.
You know, the show attracts all sorts of guests.
And so,
well, looking in the window.
We'll have to see if we can get a team photo, maybe.
Oh, he ran away. You scared him. You scared him.
Come on, Bobby.
And we're like in the city. I mean, we're to see a deer.
What is this? This is like Kaiser Town, right?
There's usually like three or four out there at a time.
There's deer everywhere, though. I've seen deer downtown. Well, Delaware Park.
Right.
You know, kind of attracts them.
But
I've seen deer downtown, like on the waterfront.
Yeah.
A bunch of them.
But man, that guy knows a lot of football for being in prison for 10 years, huh?
Well,
he's a fantasy football expert, right?
Exactly.
Fantasy football. He watched his Trojans. He watched the Bills whenever he could. He was into the fantasy football.
Ran four leagues, right?
Oh, I think it was more than four.
Unfortunately for Darnold, I don't think he's going to stick around till five.
So, OJ, giving us a little insight as to Sam Darnold's mentality, that he doesn't want to go to Cleveland and he doesn't want to go to Buffalo.
It's
not really up to him.
Is that reporting?
No one wants to go to Cleveland.
Yeah, no, it's not up to Sam Darnold, but you would, for a town like Buffalo or Cleveland, where I'm originally from.
Who was the one that said...
I'm not done.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought you were. Long pause.
There's the inferiority complex. You don't want your new quarterback coming in saying, like Jim Kelly.
Yeah.
How bad that was. He made it clear that he didn't want to be in Buffalo before he even stepped foot in Buffalo.
Yeah, that didn't work out well.
Now he's still here.
Hot take, Tim Graham. Cleveland Browns will make the playoffs this year.
Wow. Whoa. Hey, the deer's back. She enjoyed your take.
You think Cleveland did with Tyrod Taylor?
Yes.
Is it because you have a Tyrod Taylor affinity? Does it come down to that, or you just like, is it the other moves? What?
I like all their other moves. I think that they've put a lot of pieces together. If they can somehow get Odell Beckham, I don't know how realistic that'll be, but they would have by far the best receiving core in the NFL. But I just like the moves that they've been adding. They have receivers, they have running backs, they have a good defense.
Good defensive pieces.
Adam Schefter reporting today that the Giants are looking for two first-round picks for Beckham.
The Bills have two first-round picks.
The Bills could have just drafted him with one first-round pick.
They used two first-round picks on another guy.
That's right.
Yeah, I can see the Browns, but that's a tough division. I mean, you still have Flacco, Dalton, Roethlisberger in there. I don't see Tyrod beating them, you know, once or twice a year.
What else do we want to hear about from OJ? Let's hear...
Did he talk about the murders?
Meh. No. That was the L.A. crap. That's what he referred to in my interview with him as the L.A. crap.
Why don't you ask about that, Tim? Any more than that?
Shut up.
Well, we had... there were some conditions on the interview, which I honored.
Mm-hmm.
And he said a lot of things that I didn't ask him about, but I gave up my end of the bargain.
How long did he sit down with you?
I held up my end of the bargain. 3 hours.
Wow.
And I did, if he brought up a subject, I would ask a follow-up. So on things like being in prison.
Oh, yeah.
He brought up all the different white supremacist gangs in prison. So my follow-up was, did you have to join a gang to, you know, for protection? And he was like, oh, I'm OJ. I didn't have to do that. I was bringing them together. He was like the Martin Luther King of Lovelock Correctional Facility.
Did he talk at all about any players currently on the Bills or anything about the Bills' current
why
group?
He's been
he loves LeSean McCoy.
Why he's been wearing a shady jersey every
he
day.
He loves LeSean McCoy. Mm-hmm. He thinks that LeSean McCoy is the closest anybody has gotten to Barry Sanders since Barry Sanders retired.
That's interesting. Wow.
Let's listen to clip number four, Bobby. This is O.J. Simpson, I believe, talking about how if he were in the same backfield as anyone else, how his who would if every all things being equal, Jim Brown had Hall of Fame blockers, Hall of Fame coach, all this other stuff. So I believe the premise of this quote, O.J. is saying, if all the running backs in history had the same line and coaches, who would be the best?
I personally say, I used to say, and I'm looking at the whole different group of players, but I used to always say that if you put me in the same backfield, the same lineman running the same plays, the only two guys that would have concerned me would have been Barry Sanders and Gale Sayers. You know, that's what I felt. You know, you know, Dickerson would be, you know, with his overdrive and stuff, but you know, I look at LeSean, and he's the closest thing to Barry I see as far as what that okie doke, right. And that lateral okie doke. I mean, the guy does some beautiful things, you know, where if you're sitting in the stands, I used to always say the mark of the real great players is he can get a person on their feet just like that. You know, he makes a movement, everybody's up. Oh,
yeah.
You know, good. You know, and LeSean does that.
That's that OJ laugh.
That's all I can think about, that whole clip.
Mike Rodak, when was the last time you ever heard OJ talk about the okie doke?
Right now.
See, it was a big exclusive for me.
Yeah?
As soon as he said okie-doke, I knew that I had a special story on my hands.
You did.
The okie-doke was getting away with
it. It's a good stat here from Michael
Davis. What was that,
Smith.
Polo?
That was just gold that he had.
What was it?
I said the okie-doke was getting away with murder.
Well. that is gold. A good stat here from Michael David Smith of Pro Football Talk, saying LeSean McCoy turns 30 this July. Only 7 players in NFL history have had more yards from scrimmage in their 20s than LeSean McCoy. Barry Sanders, Marshall Faulk, Tomlinson, Emmitt Smith, Edgerrin James, Jim Brown, and Walter Payton.
Wow. All but Edgerrin James in the Hall of Fame, and Edgerrin James has been a finalist twice, I think.
Snub.
I think. But he's at least, now, but he'll probably get in at some point.
Yeah, he'll get in.
So you're talking about all the Hall of Famers. Do we have time for one more OJ clip?
Yeah, what do you want?
I don't know. Let's see. I played that one since Jonah asked the question about did he talk about guys. How about we can talk about the fantasy league? No, we did that last week. Yeah. How about
CTE stuff? Is
well, we did that last week, but we can do that in the next segment.
How about the
we'll talk about CTE and we'll bring in the you know the new safety rules in the NFL.
What about number 10 on that list?
Oh, I think we played that too, and it's a quick one. But let's go ahead. This one's a good one. Number 10.
People want to make money or get ratings. They gonna pimp me. That's right. I know I'm gonna get pimped.
We can play that one. Bobby can just intersperse that any point.
Yeah. Cut that laughter
out. Oh, yeah, that's right.
Sounds like Mike didn't listen to the show last week.
No.
Sounds like I was on a plane last week.
Didn't download the podcast.
Jonah, for about the first half hour of today's show, Mike wasn't listening to the
show. I feel like I had to...
Mike made his halftime adjustment.
Kinda, yeah, I had to get back into it, you know? It takes a little while.
He just read a list with only 7 names on it and not 27 names.
Yeah?
That's right. He's condensing it.
Right. Yeah, I'm getting better, you know?
You know, Mike, you can listen to the whole show on the podcast.
Twit the Great.
Not just segments.
Yeah, did you know that? That was that's a new revelation from last week. The show has evolved. You can now listen to the entire Tim Graham show on iTunes.
You don't you not can just do that.
No, only segments.
Yeah.
Okay.
I can listen to the entire show.
You can listen to the entire show on Facebook Live as well.
But Jonah, by the way, we're missing an opportunity. You can be swinging that camera around to show the deer.
Flip around during the break.
Where's the deer?
Well, right I could there. Try, but... It doesn't go. The chair doesn't spin 360 degrees. I'm going to give it a shot, but this could ruin the whole broadcast.
Oh, this is like Evel Knievel stuff here.
It could ruin everything.
All right. I'm sorry, Mike. You were saying?
I was saying that. No, boy. I was saying. Yeah. Doug Whaley would always say, if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. But that was relevant 90 seconds ago.
I see.
I think the show is not getting better. It's only getting worse.
If people are listening to the show right now, they somehow like the train wreck quality of it, so we might as well embrace it.
I'm
so
sure that
once we blow it at the beginning, people will start tuning out. Or I guess at 5 o'clock, maybe they get in their cars after work.
I'm
and
sure Scooter's listening to it.
People have said that.
Sullivan
to me.
Is still stuck at the entrance.
They say I like how you guys don't sound like professional radio people.
People like that, do they? Well, good. We're giving them what they want today. Tim Graham Show, Sports Radio 1270 The Fan. 5 years ago, here with Mike Rodak, Polo Kerber, and you. Phone lines are open, 270-1270, 716-270-1270. Hey, Bobby.
Yeah.
How about that team we were watching, huh? Hey, Jonah, how do you like your team?
Which team?
Well done, thank you.
Yeah, actually, this match, speaking of teams, we were talking about this in the break, but there's been Facebook commenters that they're interested in Polo's jersey. So maybe he could explain a little bit. What he's wearing.
It is a good-looking jersey.
I appreciate it. It's the jersey from the first Mighty Ducks back when they were District 5. Mighty Ducks 1 back in the early 90s. It's an Adam Banks jersey. Didn't want to wear the Conway. You know, everybody has Charlie Conway. Everybody liked Charlie Conway.
Now, which one's Banks,
different.
Though? I don't remember the names. Which one was Banks?
Banks was the one that came from Iceland. They called him Cake Eater. They used to pick on him.
Oh, right, right.
So yeah, switched it up a little bit. Adam Banks.
I thought you were talking about Kanye the rapper, Conway the rapper.
Oh,
you
no. Charlie Conway.
Conway Twitty.
Conway, that's Kanye. The local rapper, right?
Yeah. Yep.
See, when I say in such an over the top way, I give out the phone number, we actually get a caller.
Suspense is killing me.
We'll see what Bobby has to say. So the catch rule, Polo Kerber, what is a catch?
Apparently, Dez Bryant's catch against the Packers is a catch.
Calvin
Benjamin is a touchdown.
It is now just three facets to a catch. Number one, and by the way, this isn't a tweak anymore. They stopped tweaking the rule. They totally blew up the other one. They deleted it from the rule book and started from scratch, rewrote the rule.
The Patriots-Steelers, that would have been a catch?
Yes.
Okay.
Most of these non-catches would be catches.
Okay.
Number one, control the ball, possession. Number two, establish yourself in bounds with 2 feet or a body part.
Okay.
Famous John Madden book title, 1 knee equals 2 feet, or shoulder or hand or whatever. And number three, a football move, meaning a third step or lunging for the goal line for the first down marker, a pivot, something like that, tucking the ball. And now you got to catch.
So you don't have to control the ball through the ground.
That is gone.
Perfect.
Through the ground is eliminated from the rule book. No longer exists. And what this is going to do, though, is two things. There'll be more catches, but there are also going to be more fumbles. And one of the questions that Rich McKay, who's on the competition committee, he's a longtime executive currently with the Falcons, was asked is, does the NFL view a fumble as a positive play? Meaning, is that... Does the NFL okay with fumbles? There are certain plays the NFL would like to eliminate. But as Rich McKay said, is that you take fumbles, if you look at highlights on the reels, there are a lot of fumbles turn into highlight reel type plays with the return or they're game-changing plays. So I'm okay with that because you're going to have guys catching the ball, taking that extra step, bobbling it, losing it, and that used to be a fumble. Or it used to be incomplete, now it's a fumble.
As a fan, I'd rather have the fumble than to not even be able to explain what a catch is, you know, or think, oh, yeah, that's a catch. Des Bryant caught that. Calvin Benjamin caught that. And, you know, no one knows. Even the refs are questioning it. Announcers are questioning it. It's kind of just a discretion thing. So now I like that, how clear it is.
And I know that both Terry Pegula and Brandon Bean have come out and said, well, why wasn't this... there sooner. Like, we would have loved this to be the case when Kelvin Benjamin had his touchdown against the Patriots that was overturned, which under the new rule would have stayed. But the bigger issue, I think, was still are they overstepping their bounds with replay? If there's not enough evidence on the replay, can they make these calls? So either way, that's still an issue. No matter what the rule is, Al Riveron is still making decisions in New York with potentially not conclusive evidence. So no matter how you write the rule, what happened last year against New England could still be an issue.
I don't know. I think it seems pretty straightforward.
Well, the football move is still very subjective. And if you're reviewing that, Al Riveron in New York, his interpretation of what a football move is could be very different than what Gene Steratore's could be on the field.
Well, sure. But there's maybe there'll be bullet point examples of what constitutes a football move. But
there's
doing
always,
a cartwheel might, you know, you may say, like, boy, that's a pretty amazing thing that guy just did there. But it's not a football move. That's a gymnastics move.
But right. What they've done now is if it's close, it's going to be a catch. It always was before, but as much as everybody would say, what is a catch? We don't know it was a catch. We kind of knew that if there was any shred of evidence that maybe it wasn't a catch, the replay was going to determine it not to be a catch. Now, it's probably going to go in the other direction.
I just think there'll be an example some point next season where we're all sitting there They're going to say it's a catch, and I think we're going to say, well, that's probably not a catch. I mean, rules go both ways. There's no magic wand, and ultimately, yeah, it's probably a good thing that they simplified the rule, but there's still going to be issues, I'm sure.
Emptying out my notepad from the owners' meetings, a couple of things that I gleaned by talking to some other owners. You know, it was the first owners' meetings I'd been to since 2014 when Ralph Wilson died. He was at his home in Grosse Pointe Shores, Michigan, but the owners' meetings were going on at the same exact location, in fact, at the Ritz-Carlton in Orlando. And so it was my first opportunity really to be around a lot of the other owners and executives at the league level who I was dealing with during the Bills sale, you know, sources that I had who were telling me what was going on with this group and that group. And so I was able to get a little bit of information. I know this is not really local, but hey, when I learn something, I want to share it. So Carolina Panthers. I know that $2.4 billion was reported as the number it's going to be. My sources tell me $2.6 billion, and the team will be sold to David Tepper is in the lead. He's a hedge fund manager worth $11 billion. He's a Steelers minority owner. Ben Navarro, who's a South Carolinian financier of some kind, he's also in the mix. And then Michael Rubin, who's in charge of Fanatics. He's probably it's getting a little too rich for his blood, it seems like, and he's maybe going to bring in some minority owners that might make him a little bit more attractive to the NFL, but probably not. So anyway, $2.6 billion. The Bills went for $1.4 billion 4 years ago. That was a record, and the Bills, it looks like they're going to hold on to that record for about 4 years, and then it gets obliterated by the Carolina Panthers. So you could imagine what the Dallas Cowboys or the New York Giants are worth.
What's going on with the Saints with their ownership?
Well, it looks as though it's going to be handled by the family for now. Okay. I don't think that the team is going up for sale. I'll be honest, I really didn't chat too much about that. I think it's still too fresh. Yeah. And I think people are, until the team is actually put up for sale, nobody really wants to talk about it. I guess out of respect to Tom Benson.
I know there was like... Yeah. Everything with his family.
Oh, his ex-wife and their kids from their previous marriage, yeah. And people were written out of the will and fired from the team, and similar things were happening with Carolina.
Yeah,
and so yeah, some strange goings on there, some juggling. Yeah, Jerry Richardson, who was being forced to sell the Panthers, he founded the team in '93, wrote both of his sons off out of that front office years back.
What do you think the Bills are worth now? Remember, Trump said the Pegula's overpaid.
Yeah. I don't know, but it's hard to say. With the books being closed, you really don't know. And the Green Bay Packers are our only glimpse into what NFL teams are really worth because they do have to open their books as a public business. And the NFL hates that, but they've been grandfathered in. They're community owned. Nobody else can do that. And when the Packers have to open up their books, then everybody gets to see how much money's being shared around the owners and what the television deals are really worth. Other than that, we wouldn't know. We'd have to guess or go on reports or anybody who would leak some information to us. It's hard to say, but it seems as though the NFL's growing, so I would say that the Bills are worth more than $1.4
billion now. And the stadium would have to factor into that as well.
Yeah, new revenue streams.
Right. If they end up building a stadium, if they pay their own money for it, if it's privately held, we'll have to see.
Right now they have no stadium debt, which is a little different than some other markets.
Another little tidbit I learned just before we sign off here. Colin Kaepernick came up a couple of times, and one owner told me that, and we know this to be true, but to actually have an owner say it, is that Colin Kaepernick is a serviceable NFL player, but not serviceable enough to outweigh the distractions that he may cause. And he says that he realizes that if Tom Brady all of a sudden wanted to have the same messaging that Colin Kaepernick did, Tom Brady obviously would still have a job in the NFL, and that there is a double standard there. And his comment was, I didn't create the double standard. The double standard exists. That doesn't mean, it's just he's not good enough to outweigh what we dread may come with it, even as a backup quarterback. So as you see all these other quarterbacks getting signed, Mark Sanchez's name is resurfacing again. All these quarterbacks who have jobs in the NFL, and you can look at them and say they aren't as good as Colin Kaepernick.
I mean, you can only...
Johnny Manziel. The Patriots talked to Johnny Manziel today.
You can only name so many backups in the NFL, to bring in a name like Johnny Manziel doesn't really have a negative effect on your team. You even saw teams shy away from Tim Tebow just because of how much media attention you would get with your, second or third string quarterback. So to have Colin Kaepernick be there, is it worth it? If he's not that good, then, you might look at it as getting blackballed, but teams just want to stay away from that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we've known that to be true, but to actually, because owners are getting deposed over this issue, and a lot of them are just being silent, although Bob McNair can't help himself. He was asked about it, again on Sunday, whatever. I guess some guys just don't know when to stop talking.
For sure.
You'd think there'd be one club where the owner was progressive enough, maybe anti-Trump enough, to sign Colin Kaepernick, not really just to stick it to the other side, but to say, I don't agree with you that this is such a bad thing.
Al Davis. If Al Davis were still alive, I bet you Colin Kaepernick would be a Raider.
Yeah.
That just seems to be the thing, right?
But his son doesn't have that same spirit.
No, and they're getting ready to move to Las Vegas, and they're already making some moves. They're going for the big splashy, they're trying to hit it big when they go to Vegas in a couple of years. And that, I was in Las Vegas when I did the O.J. Simpson interview, and I was actually happened when I did this show from Las Vegas studio. Friends of mine, two studios over, had me come on the air with them, and we were talking about what's going on around the league, and they were expressing to me, not only them personally, but the Las Vegas market is uneasy with what the Raiders are doing. Getting rid of certain players, Crabtree, Lynch, popular players, and John Gruden saying things about how he thinks analytics are stupid, and I know he's walked that back a little bit because I don't think he realized how badly that would play, but people are like, what kind of team are we going to get by the time the Raiders move here? Raiders, I think, really need to be careful to have a Colin Kaepernick. That's the old school Raiders, up yours mentality. You're right, Jonah. That's Ted Hendricks and
Lynch
Jim
still
Plunkett.
Around, and there's zero chance he'd still be there in 2019, 2020 when they move. Crabtree as well.
No, that's not. No. I don't mean that point.
But they just think the team is going south.
That if what are they doing to it now? Is this? I didn't mean that they were looking forward to Crabtree and Lynch in 3 years. I'm just saying is that they seem to be making moves that are strange moves.
That are more
that John Gruden is trying to show to everybody how smart he is, or how that he still got it when everybody we're like, what?
As long as they re-sign Khalil Mack, you got Cooper, you got Carr, you got some young pieces in place, so I think they'll be all right, but Vegas better than I do.
Well, that really isn't a Vegas issue.
as far as the fan interest is concerned. I think it's any market, but they just see it. They're skeptical of John Gruden. They're not just automatically saying, hey, we got a football team. Come on, do whatever you want. They're being a little more discerning. And I think, too, what plays a part is the Vegas Golden Knights. They have a team that's really good, and they can afford to be a little more discerning and not just accept whatever's coming down the pike from the Raiders.
And they see that maybe smart management matters more than star power and a big-name coach.
And they're going to have to fork over big money. First off, public money that's going into this new stadium that's being built down by the Mandalay Bay on Las Vegas Boulevard, so the public has given up a ton of money. Well, it's actually
hotel taxes.
It's hotel taxes, but, and when I did my story on Las Vegas last year, yeah, it's a big but you know what? Schools could have used that tax. It's now other people paying for it, but
right.
There's still a money that needs to be spent in throughout Nevada, and they're like, well, why couldn't you pass a hotel tax for our schools? Why are you doing it for the stadium? Because the next time when we do need a tax, that you know, it's going to get voted down. Whatever. But there's already public money or tax dollars, money going into the stadium, and then the PSLs, the hot ticket. This is going to be the fact that the Knights are a hot ticket, or it's probably going to drive up the price of a Raiders ticket because they're going to say, look, the appetite here is high for the NHL. Imagine what they're going to do for the NFL. So season tickets start at X amount of dollars, but here we come with this team that is.
I'm curious to see what's
limping
going to
into
with,
town
with Oakland,
cause and that really doesn't have anything to do with Colin Kaepernick.
It's already a struggling city, and they're losing both of their professional teams.
We're two of them. Yeah, the A's actually.
The A's will stay.
The A's said yesterday that they want to buy the Coliseum from the city.
Yeah, but then the Warriors are going to San Francisco and
right.
The Raiders are going to Las Vegas.
All right, it was a full Tim Graham show, scattershot as it was. We got to a lot. I'm sure you didn't even think you'd hear what O.J. Simpson had to say about Sam Darnold, but we even threw that in there. Bobby Rosati, Jonah Bronstein, Big Crooked, Mike Rodak, the co-host, and our guest, Polo Kerber, and Jerry Sullivan, who stayed for the first hour. Thanks to everybody. Thanks for listening.